Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hi, everybody. This is Lou Nash.
And this is Ella Gordon-Letty.
And together, we welcome you to the redesign of everything.
Where we will be talking to the global change makers, the designers, and the practitioners who are helping to redesign a better future for us all. We'll be giving you not only the inspiration, but also the tools to redesign your world for the better.
Design is the single most important force in building a thriving future for us all. A future that's more regenerative, more resilient, and more circular by design. So let's share these stories and insights gleaned from our guests at the front line of this transformation.
Thank you for being here and for listening, because together we really can redesign everything.
Today's guest is Leo Ingelsen, a senior leader in sustainability, strategy and consulting, and a health and safety and wellbeing advocate with over 23 years' experience. Leo is currently the sustainability manager at Downer New Zealand, whose career began in the UK after he studied economic geography at the University of Manchester and the University of Amsterdam. Earlier in his career, Leo founded and led two different sporting coaching businesses that operated in New Zealand, Singapore, the UK, the US, and Europe. But it was while he was at Auckland City Council that Leo led the strategy, program development, and commercial leadership of the largest sustainability and waste minimization plan in Australasia and the Southern Hemisphere. This included leading project management for Auckland's first pay-as-you-throw refuge bin service. The project was rolled out to 250,000 households and has saved over 50 million plastic bags from going to landfill. Leo has helped to generate over 100 million in non-rates revenue to fund waste minimisation initiatives and projects. And the project helped Auckland to be recognised as the world's most innovative council in tackling climate change by winning the Cities for Zero Waste Award in 2017. In January 2022, Leo joined Downer Transport as a sustainability manager, and within this role, he identifies and enables best practice and sustainable business improvements to support clients, partners, and employees with lots of really good advice, tools, and techniques to create and deliver sustainable outcomes. In 2022, he was invited to be the judge at the University of Auckland's annual sustainability conference, and his work at Downer Transport has included managing initiatives in the transition from internal combustion vehicles to hybrid and electric vehicles, the recycling of PPE and construction clothing and equipment, and in leading education, awareness, and advocacy of the circular economy. But our paths crossed with Leo when he recently joined XLabs, New Zealand's circular economy training program, alongside a cross-functional team from Downer that also included another surprise guest who is joining us today, Emily Mello, the health and safety and environmental manager who works across major projects and utilities at Downer. Emily has worked in construction for over 10 years, starting as a labourer, doing everything from waterproofing, concrete pouring, block laying, you name it, whatever the tradies needed. She was born in the US but grew up in Sweden, where she developed a strong passion for sustainability. We're going to hear more about what the Downer team did at XLabs, but I just want to reach out and say, welcome to the redesign of everything, Leo and Emily.
Kia ora.
Thank you.
It's great to have you here, both of you. So at the start of each interview, we like to ask our guests, what actually does the redesign of everything mean for you, Leo?
Thanks, Lou. Realistically, I think we need to think big picture holistically about not only what we're doing and how we're doing it, but why we're doing it. What's our why? What's the reason for the planet we're doing it? And what's our why for our whānau and our hopori, our communities in which we work? So getting to that stage where we're doing that, making sure that we're doing the right thing, the best thing that we can, not only for our children, but our children's children's children, but also the planet in which we live. There's lots of species out there. You're talking about 20,000 species in the sea, and it's their planet, and we need to look after it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Leo, tell us a bit more about your journey from where you started to where you are today. What were some of the pivotal moments that has led you to the work you're doing?
Yeah, no problem. So, grew up in the UK, a place called Northampton, which is a shoemaking town in the middle of the country. English father, French mother, got a brother. He lives in France with his partner. And from a young age, we used to go to Europe a lot and to the France and travel around the UK. And in doing so, I kind of got this fascination of geography, different cultures, different places and different diversity. And out of that, I think there was born a passion where, you know, geography was there everywhere. And it was so, we lived in such a global world and globalization was so prevalent. And it was just, yeah, really fascinating to lead me on to university, study geography and then go traveling and eventually settle in New Zealand all these years later. And you're just seeing how green we are and how green we can be and how people live all over the world and how different it is and integrating those together.
Yeah, I can really reflect that. And I guess in geography, we have essentially the materials that we're mining, right, for the things we're producing and the projects we're working on. So great to have someone with a geography background. Now, Emily, tell us a little bit about your journey from where you started to where you are today.
Absolutely. Thanks, Lou. Very similar to Leo here, I've done quite a bit of traveling as well. So born in the States, but grew up in Sweden mainly, but always traveled back and forth in between. And in the States, you know, going to big cities and such, and then seeing the difference from where I lived in Sweden, which was a very small village with only 1,000 people, was quite significant. You know, in the States, you're looking at everything is XXL plus size. You know, you get a liter of Coke at the cinema for a dollar. Whereas when you go back home to Sweden, you know, the supermarkets will have cherry tomatoes from the neighbors, or the meat will come from a farm nearby rather than the mass production. So you could really see quite a significant difference there. And then through traveling quite a bit, I lived in Australia for a while and then came to New Zealand 7 years ago now. And definitely very green. It's been really interesting. And also seeing quite a few similar initiatives here in New Zealand, as you can see in Sweden. Yeah, it's been an amazing journey. And it's really, really interesting to see how we're moving forward.
That's really cool. I have children of my own and I often have this debate with them about mass consumerism because it's very hard to kind of whet children's appetite for it. I wonder, what did you have a preference around your US life versus your Swedish life?
I did. It was always my Swedish life, to be honest. I think you're so right in mass production and, you know, a perfect example is fast fashion and the food industry as well and such. And yeah, where I'm from in Sweden is a very holistic view. So, you know, also what you put in yourself is going to make, you know, decide how you feel as well. So eating really clean and not too many chemicals and stuff. So yeah, Sweden was definitely, I'm a bit of a nature girl as well. Similar to Leo, like going out and hiking and being out in the nature and such. So I think that's why I find New Zealand feeling like home as well.
That's really cool. So, Leo, sport's been a really big passion for you too, which led you to do a whole bunch of really interesting things, in particular with tennis. Can you tell us a little bit more about your love of tennis and the experience of taking that passion into a couple of business opportunities for yourself?
Yeah, no problem, Lou. So, grew up in the UK playing tennis. 2 months of the year when the weather's actually decent, we could play tennis and get out there, which is great. And always had a love for the outdoors, similar to Em, and, you know, getting out there and exercising. Found that I enjoyed that. And whilst I was at university, I mean, I've always tried to make most of my time and qualified, went through tennis coaching badges, those kind of things. And then came to New Zealand to start a business up, coaching tennis. Really enjoyed it, found it really challenging, meeting lots of people, getting out there in front of others. I think there's a few things there, teaching across the generations and across the cultures and diversity, but also as well as that making sure that people are having fun, and that's the most important thing. Tennis is a game for life. People can play from 6 months to 102. So, yeah, it was really, really something that I really enjoyed and really suit going forward and, you know, got me into New Zealand society.
Yeah, that's really cool. Do you have any ideas for how the sports kind of industry or sector, if you like, could leverage the circular economy and become more sustainable?
Yeah, no, it's a great question, Lou. And I think the benefit of sport is you have to look at the Olympics, the World Cup, Commonwealth Games, and the huge global audiences that they bring in, over 1 billion plus people. which is great. So there's a huge opportunity there to inspire and advocate for circular business and circular business design. You have to only look at the Commonwealth Games in Birmingham. They're the most sustainable games ever. A challenge with all the games previously, Commonwealth, Olympics, World Cup, is the legacy that they leave behind. So occasionally you have this problem of empty stadiums, redundant stadiums, and the costs as well. So the unique thing with Birmingham was that they managed to save 400,000 bottles from landfill just by using reusable bottles. They had a forest, the Commonwealth Forest, that managed to save, they reckon, about 250,000 tons of carbon dioxide through carbon sequestration.
Wow. Wow.
And then the other thing is they used 88% existing venues, so they needed to build two more venues than they already had. And that's a great story to be able to tell. And if you just think about all the carbon dioxide that you're going to be saving by not doing those things, not using those bottles, and not building those stadiums, it's really an excellent story to tell, and it's a great legacy to leave behind. And I think any games from now on needs to look to do the same.
Yeah, it's so interesting, isn't it? I know for probably a lot of countries that have bid for the right to hold the games, it would be around what would they invest in, and in building new stadiums would almost be a requirement, right? That, oh, you're going to do all that to create a very successful game. So it's really interesting that they kind of got away with being able to position that they're using existing stadiums.
Yeah, definitely. It's awesome.
Yeah, that's really cool. So thinking about your role at Downer, Leo, as sustainability manager, can you tell our listeners a little bit more about what that role involves? You know, what are some of the approaches, methods, mindsets that you use in your day-to-day of that role?
So at Downer, I work in the transport team. We have a huge carbon footprint, about 120,000 tons a year in New Zealand. So the bulk of that is transport. There are some challenges as well with transport in terms of health and safety and other elements. It's just the nature of the work we do. But in that, I see a huge opportunity for us to be able to save it, carbon emissions, move towards circular business design, but also as well as advocate for change. So I'm all about practicing what I preach, helping those around me to do the right thing and the best thing, and just building that awareness out there, which is really important and really essential for what we're doing. But also as well, there's those random acts of kindness that we've got to do. And I think you might do things like that and someone will see that, and then they'll see somebody else do that to somebody else, and it kind of, you're paying it forward, which is great. And you want to be able to seem to be doing that. And also, I think as well, is that doing the right thing for the planet is essentially what we want to achieve. We work in heavy industries, as I said, and it's not that easy to get to where we want to go, but it just starts with small steps, baby steps, and getting to where we want to go, and what that looks like is all part of the education piece.
Sounds like it's a big kind of cultural piece for you guys.
Massively so. I think it is a cultural piece, and it's about behaviour change, which takes time. And also the nature of the industry we're working. A lot of our depots are based in places where they're quite remote or they're under construction, and there are challenges around doing that. But also there lies opportunities in how we think differently about what we're doing and how we're doing it.
Yeah. Do you find you have to get on site quite a bit in your role?
I find I do, which is great. It's very varied and I love that. And there's a range of audiences that you're talking to. And in doing so, you've got to be mindful of who you're talking to, because as soon as I mention carbon and those kinds of things, then people kind of look at me or...
Like they don't know what it is?
Well, I would say they don't know what it is, but it's just that education piece. Yeah. They've perhaps not had it. They're not interested. And look, with all of this environmental sustainability, it's all got to be low effort, right? You've got to make it easy for people, otherwise they won't want to do it.
Yeah.
And small steps. Yeah. And they lead to bigger things, which are great.
Yeah, awesome. Emily, can you share a little bit more about your role? Now, I know that you joined X-Labs this year too as part of the team.
Yeah.
And you were part of the team that was jumped into X-Labs Learn.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I remember seeing lots of gorgeous videos and work from you guys as you work through that. So I'm interested to hear about your role and your experience with the X-Labs Learn program.
Yeah, absolutely. So health and safety environmental manager for major projects and utilities. So I lead our health and safety team across our projects in New Zealand. So working on major projects, there's also a lot to take into consideration, such as, well, of course, health and safety, sustainability and environment. And they actually work very closely with each other. And a passion for sustainability and around the environment on projects started for me at City Rail Link, which I worked at before. So trying to bring that knowledge with me into these projects as well. So been really, really interesting. I've loved the journey. It was a great opportunity when I was nominated for X Labs by my managers. They know that I am very passionate about the sustainability and environmental aspect as well. So got to join, met a great team. It was pretty spectacular to have a team where everyone is so like-minded, and having a platform where even the sky wasn't your limit. You were able to ball things around and hear people's thoughts, and you got to be really creative. That's something that I love. I love being creative. And, you know, some of the ideas that first we thought, there's no point in thinking about that because that's never going to work. That was actually one of the ideas that we went with. So it started off being something as, well, that's never going to work, to, oh no, now we're doing it. It's been a spectacular journey. I think everyone should get the opportunity to do X Labs, to be honest.
I think we've had that quote from a few of the teams, haven't we? Yeah.
Not sponsored, by the way.
It's a lived experience, Emily. It's a lived experience. I remember jumping on, I think we did like a workshop or we did a check-in with you guys, and you were all videoing in, zooming in from all parts of the country because a lot of you were on site.
Yeah.
But definitely what I got from you guys is that you were all really pumped to be there and working together as a team on this. And I think one of those things that pops up that we hear a lot is, and if you're working in sustainability, often you feel a little bit alone and you're the champion by yourself, right? And you're getting a lot of inquiries. Do you want to just share a little bit more about how your time at Learn gave you a chance to kind of connect in and work together as a team? Anything that kind of jumps out for you?
It's just being given the platform and the opportunities and really being able to educate yourself through your own view. So a lot of, you know, the education that you get with X Labs is not just sitting and reading facts or data. It's about going out and exploring your environment from your own view. And that's something that made me as an individual feel more connected to my group, to my company, and to my wider community. And really made me realize that in sustainability and for our environment, every single person can make a huge change. You know how a lot of times people say, oh, what's the point? I'm not going to be able to make a big change. But in this aspect, every single thing that one person does actually has a huge impact. And that was pretty revolutionary for me because even though, of course, I've thought that before, but this was when it became a reality.
Yeah, that's amazing. You're empowered, right?
Yeah.
Now more than ever, businesses are being forced to rethink how they operate. And Circularity is here to help. We run workshops that bring your organisation, industry or community together.
You may wish to gain an introduction to the circular economy opportunity, have a masterclass on creative closed-loop systems for your materials, or think about how you can change behaviours, develop circular business models, or even explore potential impact territories for your brand. Our facilitators at Circularity design and deliver immersive experiences that defy convention and demand engagement.
You find the time and we will make the most of it. We build capability, unlock new value, and co-design an extraordinary future together. Reach out via our website, circularity.co.nz.
Leo, what did the X Labs Live week look like for you and the team, you know, when you came together as a design sprint? So 5 days together. Inside.
You're laughing already.
Well, I know that you were one of the lead people who to encourage us as facilitators to make sure we got you all outside, which was a very, very good prompt. So potentially what were the barriers by being inside too much? But I'm interested to hear about your experience of X Labs Live, the week, some moments of joy, some pivot points in there for you.
So I think the great thing was being in the room with like-minded people across different sectors, so fast-moving, consumer goods, consulting, construction, engineering, energy, not-for-profit, non-government, And I think as well, getting people with the same enthusiasm and that momentum to actually want to make change and have great ideas and actually really not even think about any box. And like Em said, you've just got to think big picture and, you know, no limit to what you can achieve and what you can do and how you can do it. And it goes back to what I said earlier, what's our why? And thinking why we're doing it and then translating that how we do it and how it's going to be there for the better. So the highlights were working with my team as well, of course. I joined X-Labs quite late in the piece and they tend to manage my sense of humour reasonably well and look after me reasonably well and get me up to where I needed to be, which is always appreciated. No, they were really good. But also working with the other teams, understanding what they're doing and how they're doing it and having those conversations. And we did have some challenging conversations about flipping our proposal, our idea on its head and working with the X-Labs partners and yourself and the X-Labs team in order to do that and to get to where we landed. So that was really, really fantastic. And it just showed you that there were no limits to achieving that. And it's like anything, you get out what you put in, right? So
yeah,
100%.
Yeah, you guys put in a really big effort, which was really lovely. I wonder if you could share with the listeners what solution you landed on, because you were tackling the big beast of construction waste. And as Downer, you obviously see that, you're part of it, you're part of the industry. What solution did you land on, Leo?
So we came up with a product called Confinity. So it's reimagining the new life for construction waste, specifically focusing on concrete and crushed concrete and power poles. Now, if concrete or cement was a country, it would be the third highest emitter of carbon dioxide in the world. So huge challenge worldwide, huge challenge for our industry. And we looked at other ways we could reuse recycled and crushed concrete. We do have partner Green Vision Recycling where we can use that. And they've been used for the City Rail Link and other products. But also as well is that in those urban areas where housing density is quite high is whether we can reroute cables underground like they do in cities like New York and others around the world where concrete power poles are not the best solution. So it was about finding a solution that worked in a manner of different ways. And now we're at an opportunity where we've presented to X-Labs and we can move a solution going forward. One of our partners who we met for X-Labs, which is great, but also looking like what that's going to look like down the line and further down the track.
That's really awesome. Emily, what were some of the personal highlights for you during X-Labs Live?
Connecting with like-minded people, feeling empowered, being given feedback and guidance was really good and it made us grow even more. But I think building those relationships, like I was saying to you right before we started this podcast, was, you know, even just looking at our old work, it gave me nostalgia. It made me miss it. It almost feels like you're being a part of a little family.
Yeah.
In a way. So I think creating those relationships really and feeling very empowered to make a change.
Yeah, that's super cool. So glad you guys had that experience. Just shifting slightly, Leo, what are some of the gaps and opportunities you see in the area of sustainability and circular economy, and how do we fill them?
I think the first step before we get to any circular economy, linear economy, recycling economy, which tend to be the three buzzwords or the two buzzwords, linear economy and circular economy, is actually rethinking what we're doing and how we're doing it and why we're doing it. Because if you're rethinking and what our purpose is and why we're doing it, well, you rethink, well, do I actually need this product? And where possible, refuse using it. And then if you can't refuse it, reduce what you're using of it. So there's no need for it to actually enter the supply chain or the economy. There's no need for a circular economy if you're rethinking about what you're doing. And that tends to get left out all the time. Why have a circular economy? No need. Just rethink. Just think about what you're doing and doing it differently. Do you actually need those products? So that's really the biggest takeaway for me. And I think as well, education and being out there and making sure that you're educating people. Because at the end of that, after rethinking, refusing and reducing your products, you go through all the different cycles. And at the end, you want to really be repurposing and recommending to others what you're doing.
Yeah, awesome. Emily, what's some of the gaps you see in sustainability and circular economy? What's on your wish list?
Oh, my wish list. Gosh, I think it's it comes back to the individuals, I think, but also, you know, corporates. One thing that's really interesting for me on a personal level was that I actually did a challenge. So I packed up everything I owned and put it into boxes. And then as I was using it, I started taking it out. And, you know, I realized, I think I got rid of something like 600 objects in 3 months. And, you know, that's where that consumerism comes in. And there's so much that we actually don't need. And it's very similar in corporates or in businesses and such, as if we start at the planning stage, that's really where we can make an impact. And that's where, you know, we need to be taking in sustainability in the planning stages and lead the way forward. Because if as a business we start setting our standards high, then other businesses are going to have to start coming up to that same standard to be able to compete. And sustainability, it's really starting to come up now. It's been, you know, even 10 years ago, people, when you spoke about sustainability, not too many people were aware of actually what did that mean and such. But now it's on everyone's radar. And I think it's time for businesses and such to really step it up, but also for us as individuals to start taking responsibility. And it can be really small, you know, bring that bag with you to Countdown, you know, go and get a keep cup. So those are some gaps, but also finding the time to do in the businesses as well. I think businesses definitely need to allocate more resource and such to sustainability, which it deserves. And by doing that also, they will have that resource in the planning stages, throughout the construction stages, and through the finishing line. So, you know, for example, working in major projects, there's so much materials and that doesn't get used or is waste. And it's, you know, how can we share that and make it better for us as a country? One of the things that we did on X Labs was we were thinking about circular economy in the business, but then we were also thinking, okay, what about creating a circular economy with our community? So what we can't reuse, recycle and such within our business, let's share that. And that's, again, I think the gap is maybe a little bit connecting businesses, communities and individuals, because I think there's so much we can get if we actually combine and work together.
Yeah.
It's funny, Lou, every time I speak to Emily since X Labs, she's talking about clearing stuff out. So I certainly see the influence that it's had.
I know.
I mean, I do that anyway every weekend, but it's great. She's like, oh, yeah, I'm clearing out more stuff, giving it away, giving it to charity, or passing down to my nieces. So no, it's awesome. It's, you know, and you see that. It's really good to see.
Yeah. My question for you around the box, cause the 600 items, did that include clothing?
Do you know what? Most of it didn't.
Yeah.
I have something called a capsule wardrobe, but where you only have I've got about 50 pieces of clothes that I mix and match. One example was I had 7 iPhone chargers. Who needs 7 iPhone chargers? And still, every time I go on a trip, I forget the iPhone charger. So now I just have to be, you know what? You've got the iPhone charger. Go and get it, or you need to borrow it off someone, or you need to go to, you know, if you're traveling, if you're going for work, go and ask the hotel for a charger, you know?
Yeah. Where are those iPhone chargers going? They become the black sock.
Yeah, exactly.
Of things we lose, right? The iPhone charger. Hey, I just want to ask, because it sounded pretty cool, this kind of city rail project and how you use crushed concrete, right? Because in a lot of these construction and building projects, we know in Aotearoa, there's a lot of regulations, there's a lot of standards, you know, which must provide such a headache to you guys that are trying to create circularity in resources and materials, right? Can you just tell me a bit more about how you would go about even trying to use recycled materials and how that project might have worked?
So with the crushed concrete, so it's quite hard to do structures with it. But what we did was we used flowable fill. So basically just to fill up a certain area, but not a structural aspect of it. So for example, you can use it in roading and such would probably be the main area where we could actually reuse it. But there has been new limitations in that because of all these requirements. But that was one of the things that we did on City Rail Link 1, where we used it as flowable fill. Now, Leo, I believe you had some experience as well with using crushed concrete on City Rail Link.
So Green Vision Recycling is very inspiring to watch. We struggle with the scale of being able to do it on a wider scale in this country. And that's something, you know, Downer really wants to move towards, and it's something that we can move towards. It's just bringing all those partners together. And I think crossing the T's and dotting the I's is something that a lot of big businesses struggle with, and we struggle with that ourselves. But as soon as you have those conversations and get talking to people, it's amazing the synergy and the connections you can get and leverage off those relationships to make successful outcomes for all.
Yeah. So do you think it's just a perception, this, that we can't use those materials because of regulations? Do you find that if you do develop those relationships, you can actually find a use for them, such as filler or in the roads? You know, because it has been held up a lot that those materials can't be used for structural, obviously.
I think you always go with the easy option. Yeah. And unfortunately, the easy option in this country, because the cost of landfill comparatively to the rest of the world is less expensive. I know it's just gone up again in July and it went up the previous July. It's just the easy option and you do that. But through building our awareness of our network, we're looking at reusing not only concrete, but other items and products as well. And that certainly helps in repurposing those. And it just removes that cost element from landfilling.
Yeah.
And it's not just about reselling items, because we're not interested in that. We just want to get rid of them the easiest possible way. Unfortunately, it's landfill.
Yeah.
So moving away from that is something that what we can do with our X-Lab solution and the outcomes that we got from there. So that's really, and we've already found traction in that space and it's working well.
Yeah. And just to add on to Leo there, it's a lot of the time we're thinking about what's cheaper right now than when we actually start thinking about what's cheaper for the future. That's when you start putting in about, you know, you're calculating success not only from profit and currency. You're starting to create success and say you're successful because of sustainability and what you're doing for the environment moving forward. So it's about changing that mindset a little bit and therefore thinking, okay, this might be the cheaper option now, but what is it going to cost the environment?
Yeah, I can see that. I just read this week, actually, I can't believe I didn't know this crazy fact. I'm sure you guys know this. Our listeners might know this. Rice, leftover rice, was used to build, anyone know?
No.
The Great Wall of China.
Oh, really?
What?
Yeah. And so when I heard that fact, I haven't researched it. I need to get more curious around, you know, what kind of rice, where did it come from?
Yeah.
But I did have this crazy thought that literally like lunch got delivered and like the leftover rice from what wasn't eaten got, you know, kind of put into the wall and that was used to glue everything together. You don't know, you can't shed any light on that one? That's a bit of research for all of us.
No, I watched a program about rice a few years ago and it was talking about the waste of rice in certain countries, and it was terrible. Anyway, I mean, for a large part of the world's population, it's part of a stable diet, and I make a point, I've always made a point of not leaving anything on my plate.
Same. See, I want to make a tiny house, so maybe I'll get some rice.
But
you look good for not leaving anything
I can't. I can't leave a grain of rice. It will bug me. And if somebody does it, it bugs me. No grain of rice. Because, it goes back to the whole waste thing.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Hey, we've reached that part of the podcast where we'd love to hear from you guys around if you could inspire other change makers out there who are doing similar roles to you or wanting to do roles like you. What's one piece of advice you might give them? What do you wish you had known much earlier? I'll start with Leo and then and Emily, you can join him.
Yeah, no problem, Luke. So I think the biggest thing for me is not being afraid of asking the questions. No question is a stupid question. Worst thing somebody's ever going to say to you is no. And for me, it's always meant next opportunity. So you just go to the next phase. I mean, it gets people thinking about what they want to do. I think earlier on in life, if I'd have been more upfront and confident in asking questions, then it would have helped me. And certainly now I'm not afraid to ask any question. I mean, people look at me funny. Some of the things I say and do, it's just weird, right? But at the end of the day, you're just asking questions and just trying to get out there and do the right thing. And that's the most important thing. So my advice would be ask the questions. Don't be afraid of a no. It's just the next opportunity and move on.
Yeah, hear, hear. Words to live by. Emily, what's your piece of advice for the change makers out there?
Be curious. Absolutely. I think, you know, when you have a thought or when you hear someone talking about it, just be curious. Try and learn about it. It's as human, we're all about growth professionally, personally. it's just really being curious and similar to Leo, you know, asking the questions. I think it won't actually take much for someone to be curious because it is such a, it's a topic that relates directly with every single person. So I think it's just finding a bit of knowledge and then being curious and then continuously being engaged in it.
Yeah. And learning about it. It's an interesting topic. It's the world we live in.
100%.
It's the economy we operate in. There's not one area that doesn't, it doesn't cross over.
Yeah.
On that note of asking the right questions or any kind of question, now's the time to flip the question. Do you guys have a question for me?
Yeah, certainly, Lou. So I think one of the biggest or best days on X Labs was when we got into that debate about energy companies. And then we were talking about FMCG companies. And it got a bit heated, which was great. And then Em and I chimed in and we were like, well, actually, you need to rethink about, with this bottleneck economy at the moment, and it's all about supply and demand, which is great, but we need to rethink capitalism. What does that mean?
is that the question?
No, so that's not the question. So the question is how do you think we can do that, Lou? How to, you know, account for carbon emissions and get it higher up there on leaders' radar rather than just making that bottom line? How can we have that as kind of a currency that you're looking at when you're measuring business success?
I think that quite often when you're redesigning the future, you're not quite aware that it's happening already. And I think when you're a change maker and you're working on the edge of it, it's quite hard.
Mm.
So I actually have a lot of confidence that that's happening already. Yeah. Don't get me wrong, there's a lot of pushback, there's a lot of challenge. But I know for me where the aha moment lay in this great, you know, kind of challenge of these complex problems on the environment is I realized that it was a human potential opportunity, that this is our role on the planet to help tackle and solve. But we're not the ones with all the answers. And we need to look to Mother Nature and to the planet to see how this has evolved over time. I'm always fascinated to kind of read about moments in history where the planet has evolved and there's been really massive adaptations taking place in nature, you know, whether it's going into the Ice Age or, you know, where we came aboard or bacteria that's growing way down the bottom of the ocean and how that's formed life. Like, I just think that whole story around how life has evolved on planet Earth, I think that's the real story that we should be leaning into. So I think that people operating in their day-to-day and all the challenges that go on, it's reminding them of their place on this planet and that we're part of this incredible living system. And of course, I'm biased. I designed X Labs along with my crew, and I know that by putting people together in a room from different industries but are like-minded in their why, starts asking those hard questions. And I agree, that day in X Labs where we all started feeling comfortable, I remember I kicked off the beginning of the day because I read something in the paper around how Shell, one of the women from Shell, got up and told everyone that they should leave their jobs, right, because she didn't feel that they were being accountable to climate change. And I think those drivers, like, my goodness, are people going to walk out on their jobs? Like, is that going to create the change that we need to see? I see it in the young people that want to come work for me. You'll see it if you advertise for jobs. You know, people who want to work, and they want every job to be a sustainability job.
This is
our potential.
Cool.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure having you both on The Redesign of Everything. Thank you for joining us as well, Emily and Leo. We loved having Dan a part of the X Labs program, and we follow your progress and can't wait to hear more about how you guys are going to tackle this big wicked problem of construction waste, how you're going to build behavior change in the team, get in there amongst the transport emissions and reduce that. And I know that whatever you guys are involved with, it's going to be pretty epic and amazing. I thank you both for your mahi.
Cool.
Yeah.
Thanks, Lou.
Thank you, Lou.
Friends, thank you so much for joining us today. And a big thank you to our guest and our fantastic team producing The Redesign of Everything. For more information about circularity, the work that we do and how we can help your organisation, head to circularity.co.nz or find us on our social media channels listed in the show notes. Please subscribe to the podcast and leave a review on whatever platform you are listening on. And until next time, let's redesign everything. This podcast is proudly brought to you by Circularity, a team of passionate circular strategists working with a new breed of businesses.
They don't see today's challenges as someone else's problem or the solutions as a utopian vision.
Simply put, that is why we're here, to help build capability, unlock new value, and co-design an extraordinary future together.
If you are wanting to level up your impact and are looking for a partner to support that journey, consider our advisory services. Get in touch via our website, circularity.co.nz.